Brian, you're up.
The one comment before we start is I will be ruthless on time, just so you know.
All right. So, good afternoon. My name is Brian Train. I'm a freelance wargame designer. I've been playing for 35 years and designing for 20. And so far I have approaching 30 published designs. And today, I want to start by showing you something. So that little rock video you saw was just the teaser for a project that I got involved with in late 2011. And today I'm going to talk about a project I got involved with called the Global Echo Project, which is part of the United States government Combating Terrorism Fellowship Program. Sorry, how do I get that? Thank you. So I'm going to talk about the Global Echo Project in general, the purpose of the project's gaming portal, which is a part of the site, and the games used in it. I want to speak a little bit about the value of using abstract games in the context of the project, the decisions made concerning the implementation of the gaming portal, and finally the future of the Global Echo Project. Now, first of all, what is the Global Echo Project? The Regional Defense Combating Terrorism Fellowship Program, or CTFP, was established in 2002. Its purpose is to bolster the capacity of foreign militaries to detect, monitor, and interdict the activities of terrorist networks. And to that end, officers and senior civilian officials attend training and courses both in their own countries and at several centers in the United States to give them the capability to build, manage, and sustain their own counter-terrorist programs. So in this sense, I think it would be analogous to the work of some of the work of the Royal College of Defense Studies, except it's larger in scale and it's focused on counterterrorism. And the slide you're looking at is an excerpt from a report to Congress on the budget of the CTFP. It's a summary of program activity for the Philippines and is typical of the kind of activities in the program. So you can see there the list of the organization involved, the kind of training, where it was done, and the cost. About 3,000 officers and civilian officials are involved with the CTFP each year at an annual cost of about $35 million, or about 23 million pounds per year. But the CTFP is only one program, and it's not even a very large one at that, within the broader spectrum of American foreign military training programs. In 2010, there were a total of approximately 67,000 students from 159 countries around the world participated in all forms of these foreign military training programs with a total cost of about $610 million or around 400 million pounds. Now, one challenge with any training program is to make it stick with the student and to make the student stick with it. And with courses and programs like these, their intention is to build an international, constantly conversing and constantly developing network. And it's vital to keep the alumni of the program talking and in contact with each other. We now have social media platforms, and they're an easy way to create these kinds of alumni groups, but it doesn't work very well sometimes. In 2008, there was an official CTFP alumni group established on LinkedIn, and it still has only 4 members. So to improve the situation, the Global Education and Collaboration Community Online, or Global Echo, was created. The Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California, was given responsibility for developing the website in partnership with the Center for Applied Strategic Learning at the National Defense University in Washington. Both institutions are also major centers for delivering training under the CTFP. So this is the welcome page for the Global Echo website as it looks now. It has 4 sections. The first is the CTX, or Combating Terrorism Exchange, which consists of back issues of a multimedia journal with articles written by program alumni. CT Videos, which is an archive of original and ongoing collection of oral and video histories from people who have been involved in the war on terrorism. A resources page, which includes a daily news feed of counterterrorism news and a small collection of websites and blogs on terrorism, violent extremism, and radicalization. And finally, the part I was involved with, is a portal for playing strategy games. The purpose of the gaming feature is to present strategy games that could be played online by current and former students and faculty of the CTFP for the following reasons: to foster camaraderie through friendly and competitive play, to broaden and improve specific thinking skills, I'll speak about that in a moment, to be available as an in-class resource for faculty, and finally, in the long term, to develop open source software that would become the basis for a game development engine that would give program faculty the tools to add new games or even develop their own games for use in the classroom. Now, the website itself is live. I'll be giving out URLs for the website at the end of my talk. And the gaming portal is currently in what they call open beta status. I think that's more to manage people's expectations than anything else. Currently, there are three games available for play and two more soon to be added. First is Guerrilla Checkers. I designed this game. I had been working with some other people on an Afghanistan design, and like many middle-aged men, I was awake in the middle of the night, staring at the ceiling. And about, oh dark, I don't want to look at the clock in the morning, I was staring at the ceiling and thinking about how the insurgents and counterinsurgents in Afghanistan are both occupying the same physical terrain, the same section of the world at the same time, but they approach the physical terrain, that is ridges, gullies, and roads, and the human terrain in completely different ways. So why not have an abstract game where the two sides are playing with quite different pieces, working in quite different ways, but are using the same board with the same ultimate aim of neutralizing the enemy, even though they use different methods to do this. So the game uses mechanics from both Drafts and Go, but the combination of the two systems makes for a completely different game experience. The rules are very simple, the strategy can be deep, and while it's a perfect information game, it's highly asymmetric in its structure. InfoChess is a variant of chess that was developed by Dr. John Arquilla, who is the chair of the Department of Defense Analysis at the Naval Postgraduate School. It's played on a standard chessboard with standard chess pieces, and the common objective is to capture the king, but with these additions, a varied force structure, where at the beginning of the game, each player is given a number of points to purchase his forces, so a pawn is worth less than a knight or a rook and so forth. Limited information, at the beginning of the game, some pieces are invisible to the opponent and will be revealed during play. And finally, a form of non-kinetic attack that he called information warfare moves. And these rely on, one is called psychological operations, which causes the piece furthest away from the king to desert, and electronic warfare attacks, which simply deny the opponent the ability to make his next physical move. Balance of Terror is another game that was designed by Michael Freeman, who's an associate professor at the Naval Postgraduate School. It was a collaboration between him and the Institute for Creative Technologies at the University of Southern California, which is an outfit that has done other computer simulations for the Department of Defense. It's a two-player text-based game on allocating organizational resources and efforts against a number of military, political, and economic policies. For example, the state player can choose from 10 policies, including reforms, policing, or network attrition, and the insurgent can choose from among 8, including training, propaganda, or social services. Each player has limited resources and must consider the trade-offs where advancing one goal can harm the others. The goal for the state is to preserve legitimacy and stability, but the insurgent wants to advance his state of mobilization while maintaining good security. Now, within the next 2 to 3 months, the following games will be added. This one is called Asymmetric Warfare. This is just a mock-up of the art for the game as it is now. I developed this game from an original idea by Michael Freeman. This is a two-player, single-blind game that depicts the growth and development of a movement in revolt. The rebel, whose pieces start at the perimeter of the board, may see everything. But the state player, who has very few pieces, can only see the insurgent pieces when they're massed, enough of them are massed together to grow, or when he captures an insurgent piece and turns it to reveal local and local pieces. Now, the challenge for the rebel in the game is to simultaneously grow his organization, dodge the government agents because he cannot kill them, and penetrate to the center of state power, at the center of the screen there, with sufficient force to win. Meanwhile, the state player, who starts the game with all of his pieces on the board, has very few pieces. They're invulnerable, but there are very few of them. And his goal is to locate and kill enough insurgents that they no longer pose a threat. And the fifth game will be chess, which is the old standby, unaltered, and doesn't really need any further introduction because it's one of the world's most widely played games. Now, you'll notice that four of these five titles are abstract games, by which I mean they're turn-based strategy games of finite length without any random elements. And we decided to use abstract games for a variety of reasons. The most important is the value of playing abstract games as a form of mental training. And this morning, Colonel Heilman touched on a lot of the points here, so I shall just kind of skip ahead through them. This is the complete Ben Franklin quote on chess and its beneficial qualities that Colonel Heilman alluded to this morning. You see in the illustration up there that Ben Franklin is playing chess with Carolyn Howe. The year is 1774. Carolyn Howe was the sister of Admiral Lord Richard Howe and General William Howe, who would command British naval and ground forces during the American Revolutionary War. Games help us to think about how the world works in new ways and to change our perspectives. Every society plays games. Play itself is a universal human experience, and this is one reason, for example, why games give us so many game-based metaphors in every language. Games are, of course, not there just to amuse. They're used to instruct and teach and otherwise mold brains. Abstract games have been used as teaching tools and intellectual exercises for military students and professional officers for centuries. And in civil society, skill at chess or Go or other deep games was considered part of a gentleman's education. There's also an established body of research on cognitive development and improvement through playing chess and other abstract games. So again, the quote by Benjamin Franklin here illustrates three of these abstract thinking and cognitive skills that are developed by chess: foresight, circumspection, and caution. Now, the same could be claimed to a greater or lesser degree, I think, by nearly any abstract game. And to these, I would add some other skills, such as strength of memory, pattern recognition, and pattern manipulation. The game of Go is one of the world's oldest games. It features undifferentiated pieces and begins with an empty board that you add to during play. But to play good Go, you have to remember different patterns and different manipulate those patterns. Guerrilla checkers, of course, borrows from this, and asymmetric warfare, the game, is a game of maneuver through addition of forces to the board and incremental movement during play, and also requires good memory skills on the part of the state player as he tries to locate and trace the movements of the rebel pieces. Next is an ability to create and reason through alternative courses of action and to take action without complete information. So the games Asymmetric Warfare, Info Chess, and Balance of Terror are all games where players have very incomplete information available on the enemy, and players must exercise their decision-making skills at every point during the game. And oddly enough, I found this while I was reading up on this, no one seems to have thought of retrofitting the idea of double-blind play to standard chess until double-blind chess, which is also known as Kriegspiel chess, was introduced about 1895, which seems odd, you know, because the original Kriegspiel, which did feature double-blind play, was invented almost 100 years before that. Finally, the mental flexibility necessary to appreciate asymmetry in situations, that is, to be able to flip roles mentally and play from another's perspective. So this is a picture of a board for a game called Knefetafel, which is an example of the family of Tafel games that were played widely in Europe in the Dark Ages before they were replaced by chess. They relied on an asymmetric balance of forces at the beginning, and each of the two players wins in a different way. The teaching point of these games was to demonstrate that battles are seldom, if ever, symmetrical in force structure or in the objective. So all of the global echo games that I've talked about so far, except, of course, classic chess, have this feature. So all of these skills are critical to creative problem solving. All of them, I think, would be developed by playing these abstract games through the gaming portal. and I don't know what more you could ask in the development of a leader, an analyst, or some other kind of decision maker. So this was the non-technical reason why we chose to use abstract strategy games, at least the initial offerings, in the Global Echo Gaming Portal. The first principle of game-based learning is that the game that you use should be simple and should teach basic principles and dynamics quickly in an interesting way, and everything else is just an additional detail or gets in the way of this process. We felt that by providing a combination of old and new games with deep strategy, we would have the best chance of creating experiences for the players that would let them get on with the mental contest. We did not want them to struggle with the language of a complicated rule set or the intricacies of a difficult or overly detailed user interface of an attempted simulation that could, in fact, be carrying some unintended ideological or cultural baggage. And not least, this is all meant to be in the spirit of fun and friendly competition and contact across both national and organizational cultures. After all, this site was intended to be used in students' off hours after they've completed training with the program in order to increase their enduring attachment to the CTFP after their direct involvement with it. Now, the basic technical requirement of the gaming portal was that its software be uncomplicated and robust, and that the games be playable asynchronously over a web browser unassisted by maintainers or staff. And the typical user was assumed to be someone with an older and slower laptop computer playing over a somewhat iffy internet connection very far from the continental United States. So functions of the gaming portal included text or video tutorials to help in learning each game, a competition ladder, a mechanism to find opponents, and a chat window to berate your opponents during the game, a personal game lobby to save games in progress or completed games, and a forum for comments on the games and feedback on their design. Again, none of these features are anything that required a lot of bandwidth. We also made a deliberate decision not to include any form of artificial intelligence in the games. This made programming much easier, of course, and it also removed the documented tendency of players to enter gamer mode when the game turns into a quest for the programming flaws in the artificial intelligence itself. So players are instead forced to find and exploit the programming flaws in their human opponents. Another decision was not to use commercial or proprietary software. The code for the games is open source and was provided to the United States government under a Creative Commons license. It's available from the main programmer, his name is Richard Gould, on an open source code repository site called GitHub, and I will put up contact information for him in a moment. And one theme that I'm sure many of you are familiar with, we will be discussing at this conference, is that manual games don't get much respect from the professional gaming community, although computer games, of course, have many limitations of their own. On the face of it, what's been produced for this project are just digital ports of existing, although for the most part newly designed, manual games. It was necessary to do this in order to allow for remote asynchronous play online and to save games, but the fact that these games are now products of computer code sets the experience of playing them apart from the face-to-face experience of playing with two people in person. Hence, we decided that we would be including PDF files on the portal for students to download and to print out physical copies of Guerrilla Checkers, Info Chess, and Asymmetric Warfare so they could play in person with a physical copy. This is easy to do because these games have very short rules and the game equipment is already available or is very easily made. In fact, I brought the files and the physical components for these games with me in case anyone wants to try them or have a look at them later during the game demo period. So, we're reaching the end of the beginning for the Global Echo online gaming portal. There remain some minor technical issues and two designs to be added, but these should be resolved or completed within the next month or two. All of you know that the United States has embarked on a fairly ambitious project to trim its defense budget, but as far as I have been able to determine, the CTFP is not slated to be cut, at least not in the short term. And in the slightly longer term, there are three further designs that are being worked on for addition to the portal. One game is called Contagion. It's a game on the spread and the suppression of ideologies throughout the districts of an imaginary country. Players allocate resources to recruit and move agents and modify their message to gain loyalty or reduce people's attachment to the enemy's message. This will probably be the next one added to the portal after Asymmetric Warfare and Chess. Atlantis is a team-based game where players select from a variety of strategies on a fictional island to conduct either counterinsurgency or counter-terrorist actions. This is in, as yet, a proof of concept stage because the software problems that they've encountered in moderating a multiplayer game with asynchronous play have not yet been resolved. And then finally, the Situation Room. This is a scenario-based game where players make policy choices in response to specific terrorist threats or incidents. A classroom version of the game with 13 scenarios has been used in an elective that's offered to students at the National Defense University called Strategists at War. Now finally, I'm putting up a slide with links and email addresses for further information and a link where you can find the script and the slides for this presentation. Two of the longer-term purposes of Global Echo and its gaming portal are to make material available as an in-class resource to faculty who are conducting these courses and programs under the program, and eventually to develop a type of open-source software that would become the basis for a game development engine that would give program faculty the tools to add new games or even develop their own games for use in the classroom. Time and funding permitting, as always, the next phase of the project will be to do just this. Now, while this website is intended for the use of students and alumni of the CTFP, everything on it is open to the public, except for the gaming portal and the CT videos and interviews archive section. People who are associated with CTFP and members of the armed forces of NATO countries can request accounts to access these last two sections. So I hope that you will take the time to have a look at the site or be moved to request one of these accounts if you're eligible and interested. And I hope to be able to give further progress reports at future conferences. And thank you for your attention.